Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Council of Elrond. In today's episode, we'll be looking at the things that were inspired by J.R.R. Tolkien. The writer casts a massive sweeping shadow over fantasy literature, but Tolkien's influence spreads much further than that. Everywhere you look, you can see Tolkien's legacy, in entertainment, in language, in art, and even in science. I'm Dave, and with me as per usual on this quest is my brother, my captain, and my king, Johnny. So let's get into some of the craziest things that were inspired by the incredible author and professor.
That was good. Let's get another one.
All right, so before we begin, a huge shout out and thank you to our latest member on our Buy Me a Coffee account, Shan. That's Shan, not Cian. It's a Welsh Gaelic name, so thank you so much for supporting us, Shan, and for always getting in contact with us on Twitter with great questions and promoting our podcast. And always remembering that each Wednesday is Melonheads Wednesday, and sometimes Thursday for you, depending if you remember or not. So if you want to become a member and get a shout out on our podcast, head over to buymeacoffee.com/themelonheads. Thank you again, Shan. On to the episode. So before we begin, we would just like to introduce a new section that will probably appear very rarely in our episodes, but we're going to do it anyways. So this is a section called Johnny and Dave Drink the World, where us Melonheads will each have a beer on our show and give it a try and let you guys know what we think. Obviously, this has been inspired by Billy and Dom Eat the World from the podcast The Friendship Bunion, which we're currently enjoying. I'm really enjoying it. What do you think of it, John?
Yeah, I think it's great. I can't remember how many podcast episodes have been out already. There's been quite a few, and yeah, they're good. They're fun. They're lighthearted. Obviously, those guys, they're like really good friends, so they have a really good rapport, and they get on really well with each other. And I think I absolutely adore Billy Boyd. I just think he's so funny.
Yeah.
I love his just positivity and his sense of humor as well. But his beautiful his the way he rolls his R's. Where he says in the world and things like that. Billy and Dom drink the world. They eat the world. We drink the world.
We drink the world. Yeah, yeah. We don't have much substance to our diet, just alcohol. But I know you're quite a big fan of, I don't know what the name of the podcast is, but the two guys from Scrubs,
Turk and JD.
Turk and JD. Yeah, but
Zach Braff and Donald Faison.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's just a thing that fans love when best friends in a show are like best friends in real life. And that's why I think Dom and Billy are just such a great, I don't know, they have a great rapport and they have great chemistry together.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a similar thing between Billy and Dom, and then between like JD and Turk from Scrubs. Like when people see them out and about and they're actually together, people freak out. And they're like, oh my God, you guys are actually friends in real life. Yeah. So it's funny, if you follow either of them, maybe Zach Braff is more active on social media. If you follow him on Instagram or anything like that, you'll often see him putting up photos of him and Donald, a.k.a. Turk, hanging out. And they're always over each other's houses having barbecues, and they always go on holidays together. And
I love it.
It's like, it's so funny. They're actually like just best friends in real life. So that's like so cool.
Turk!
So back to the section, Johnny and Dave drink the world. So Johnny, what are you drinking over there?
So yeah, for this episode of the podcast, I went for my favorite beer of choice, which is my absolute favorite blonde beer in the world, which is the most typical beer in Madrid, Spain, which is called Mahou. Now it's spelt Mahou, M-A-H-O-U, but it's, I can assure you, it is pronounced Mahou. And I'm having a Mahou Clásica as well, which is
beautiful.
There are two types. There's five stars and there's the classic. And so, this one is, as I said, it's a blonde beer. It's a rubia, as they call them in Spain. And it's a lager, basically. But it's lovely. It's very light, and it's perfect on a hot summer's day in Spain.
Oh, very cultured. I'd say you had to go very far to find yourself a Mao in Madrid.
I went all the way to my fridge, because that's, it's a very rare situation if I don't have a couple of Maos in my fridge.
Yeah, and as you know, every time I come over to Spain, I always just fall back in love with Mao, because I think it's probably one of my favorite beers as well.
Yeah, as David said a moment ago there, Madrid, that's actually, he's not just a genius that came up with that now off the top of his head. That's actually kind of like a brand sort of a thing. And if you land into the airport in Madrid, Spain, you'll see a couple of little bars that are in the airport, and they'll have like Madrid printed above the door. So it's like,
that's, welcome to Madrid.
That's the beer that they have, the beer of choice that they have in those bars. So yeah, that's one of the first things you see when you land into Madrid. You're like, what the hell is Madrid? But when you're leaving, you definitely know what Mao is. And you're like, oh God, I love the Mao. So yeah, that's what I'm having. What about you, Dave? What are you enjoying today?
Well, I'm just going to give you a little bit of ASMR right here. Oh. So this is a Blue Moon, which is a Belgian white, a Belgian style wheat ale. So it's a beautiful, I think it's a lager, is it? Yeah. Yeah, it's a lager.
Often enjoyed with a slice of orange, right?
Exactly. I was just about to say, it's usually served with a slice of orange, and it does have that citrusy kind of
citrus kick.
Yeah, like a, yeah, it's lovely. So gonna have a little.
make sure you get a few slugs of that beer right up close to your bike there, so that our listeners can really enjoy it.
Hang on, I didn't gargle this morning. Let me go.
We're gonna lose all of our listeners because of this segment now. People are like, oh my God, I hate the sound of people eating or drinking.
Yeah,
close to a microphone. It's pet peeves. A disaster. How was your first slug of that beer? Was it good?
It's lovely. At 5:20 in the evening, it's lovely having my first beer. And yeah, this is definitely something I would go into Tesco and pick up as like a luxury item, because, you know, we can get our Carlsbergs and Heineken, but then if you just want to spend a little bit extra, go for a Blue Moon, and it'll make your night wonderful.
It's definitely good to enjoy a Blue Moon after a long day's work. Only you've never done a long day's work.
You know, after a hard day's work, well, a hard day of having about 8 pints of Heineken, you're like, do you know what? I'm going to have a Blue Moon and treat myself.
Yeah, that's the thing about these kind of blonde beers in Spain now. I can't really ever go back to having pints, like a pint of Heineken or something like that. Like, it's just, for me, like my beers of choice now would be, if I'm at home in Ireland, it's just Guinness wherever I go.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter if I'm in a nightclub, I'm going to have a pint of Guinness. If I'm in Spain and it's a hot summer's day and I'm sitting out on a terrace, I'm like, well, I definitely want to have a nice beer that'll cool me down. And yeah, there's nothing better than a cold Mao. So yeah.
Agreed. Right. Very good. Oh, there's the Blue Moon coming out of me right now.
God, take his glove!
So first of all, I want to talk about music. The Lord of the Rings landed on shelves in the mid-1950s, and it wasn't long before musicians latched onto the magical stories as a major source of inspiration for their work. In the late 1960s, Gandalf, Gollum, and other colourful characters started popping up to varying degrees of subtlety in songs of every genre, and J.R.R. Tolkien's works continued to be a popular reference material for songwriters in the following decades. So Johnny, what songs do you know that are inspired by Tolkien, or is there anything you can tell us about them?
Well, off the top of my head, and seeing as I'm a big Led Zeppelin fan, I can tell you that the lead singer from Led Zeppelin, Robert Plant, was kind of a Tolkien nerd. And I know that, like, I've read stories where people say that he, like, kind of always carried around a copy of Lord of the Rings, especially during a couple of years when they were recording particular albums, and maybe when they were recording Led Zeppelin 4. And definitely the song that there's actually quite a few songs that are by Led Zeppelin that people say have been inspired by Lord of the Rings. For example, the Battle of Evermore. Some people say like Misty Mountain Hop was inspired as well. But if you actually look at the lyrics, there isn't something that could definitely, you can definitely say, oh yeah, this is clearly inspired. However, if you look at the lyrics to the song Ramble On by Led Zeppelin, there's mentions of Mordor, there's mentions of Gollum, where basically Robert Plant says, how does it go? In the darkest land of Mordor, I met a girl so fair, but Gollum, the evil one, crept up and snuck away with her. So basically Gollum came up and stole his girl in Mordor. So that's a lyric from Ramble On, which is, I don't know, I think it's cool. Whenever I'm listening to that song and I'm with someone, I was like, listen to this line. And they're like, what? I'm like, that's Robert Plant singing about Gollum stealing his girlfriend. And everyone's like, what the hell is that about? So, yeah. But I always think it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as I said, as I'm a massive Led Zeppelin fan and I'm a massive Lord of the Rings fan. So when I hear a little overlap between something, two of your kind of passions, it's always like kind of exciting for the like inner Zeppelin nerd and Lord of the Rings nerd.
Yeah. It's like when two of your best friends meet each other and you're like, oh my God, they're together in the same room.
yeah. Except for I don't have any real friends, and my friends are non-existent rock bands from the 60s and 70s and Lord of the Rings.
So that quote from Ramble On is, "'Twas in the darkest depths of Mordor I met a girl so fair, but Gollum and the evil one crept up and slipped away with her." Which is,
yeah. Ramble On! Yeah, but it's the quote is actually, "'But Gollum! The inner world crept up and slipped away with her. Yeah. It's maybe a little bit of Robert Plant and Jack Black slipping together.
Robert Plant admitted that he wrote those lyrics when he was 21 and he actually expressed regret when he said, "My peer group were writing substantial pieces of social commentary and I was willowing along the Welsh borders thinking about Gollum." So I think that's pretty funny. He's like, oh, look, yeah, how much I could change the world with my fame and everything. And he's like, I'm just going to put Gollum and Mordor into my lyrics.
I don't know. I suppose at the time he was like, oh, I should be, you know, writing something deeper that has got more, you know,
more meaning to it,
more social meaning, and it's important for the world or whatever, because of his other maybe colleagues and friends.
And people are probably like,
I'm going to change the world with my song, and he's like, yeah, but what about Gollum?
And people are probably like, well, what do you mean by Gollum and Mordor? Does that like represent evil and whatnot? And he's like, no, it's Gollum, Mordor.
Yeah, Gollum stole my girl,
but Gollum and the evil one slipped away with her.
So another one, we all associate the Irish singer-songwriter Enya with Lord of the Rings for her beautiful performance of May It Be, which she wrote for Peter Jackson, and her majestical elven-like voice. And she also recorded Arwen and Aragorn's theme, and Anir-on as well, which can be heard during the Council of Elrond, shout out. But did you know she actually released a song in 1991 that was inspired by Lord of the Rings also? Did you ever hear of it?
In 91, no.
Yeah, so before like the movies came out and all that.
No, I have no idea.
So it's a song called Lothlorien and there's no lyrics. It's just a beautiful piano piece which perhaps encapsulates the vibe of the Elven City. It's a very short song, but it's really nice. It's like 2 minutes and 8 seconds, but it's a very nice like piano.
Cool.
Yeah, and in fact her record label had asked her if she wanted to be involved in the Jackson films because it was known that she and her lyricist Roma Ryan were, quote, terribly big fans of the Tolkien trilogy.
Shocking fans. That's cool. That's very cool. Good old Enya. And she lives in a castle. So, you know, she's that whole... Yeah, unless that's like some weird rumor that goes around like, she's Enya. She's the one that lives in that castle over there. Yeah, apparently she lives in some...
She's a banshee.
I think she lives in a castle in Ireland somewhere.
Class. Yeah, she's cool.
For this next one, I want to shout out at Vectron 5 or Nathaniel Dawns, who messaged us asking, Melonheads, quick question. How far down or up the list is Tolkien-inspired music as an episode topic? Well, my friend, that inspired us to look at this episode, so thank you very much for your message and for your support. And on the subject of shoutouts, Ash A.D. Gunty or Ashley from Twitter also messaged and said, you guys need to listen to Blind Guardian's album Nightfall in Middle Earth. So, I don't know, have you ever heard of this, Johnny?
I've never heard of that, but... No. Gura Mila Mahagath to both of these people that have sent us in such lovely messages.
Such and lovely such messages, lovely
recommendations.
And not only did I listen to that album, but I listened to their album Forgotten Tales, and instantly I was a fan. That's what I was doing for the last, like, 3 days. Well, that was one of the things. I was trying to prepare for this podcast, and I was, like, listening to Blind Guardian. I was like, oh my God, these guys are unreal. So... yeah, you should
you
definitely...
You didn't tell me?
No. Well, I was kind of in between.
You're telling
me now. I'm telling you now, and yeah.
Very good. Oh, I'm excited.
Free for the kings on the elf's high in line. Nine to the mortal. Let's cry.
They're basically a German power metal band formed in the mid-80s, and they're often credited as one of the most influential bands in the power metal and speed metal subgenres. So yeah, ooh, I think you would love these. They're actually
sounds like
fast.
My cup of tea.
Yeah. if you're like some of my favorite songs from the album Nightfall in Middle Earth would include Into the Storm and The Curse of Feanor, but listen to the whole album because it's like a musical. But if you're not a big fan of metal, I would highly recommend just listening to their songs Lord of the Rings. Like, they have a song called Lord of the Rings and a song called Bard Song. They're not very metal at all. They're just like beautiful guitar playing songs with really good melodies. So for you, Johnny, definitely check out Lord of the Rings, especially that one's really cool. I remember listening to it at the start and I was like, it's kind of weird, kind of quirky, but by the end I was like humming it away, and I've listened to it about 10 times now.
Well, I like I like melodic guitar music because I play the guitar, but then also I'm a bit of a metal fan as well. Speaking of which, I just the other day got myself some tickets for Metallica, who are coming to Madrid next year, so I'm pure excited about that as well. So going back to see Metallica again. Can't wait.
Nice.
But, unfortunately, I don't think they have any Lord of the Rings inspired music. But,
no.
At least not yet. I'll have
not
to
yet.
Maybe send a little message to James Hetfield and say, hey, read Lord of the Rings and write a song. God damn it.
Yeah. But in general, this band, Blind Guardian, they remind me of Muse with falsetto a cappella, and their rock opera style of playing. And some of their songs remind me of 80s arcade. Do you know what they're like? That kind of, I don't know how do you describe that, but I was like, oh my
that
God.
That sounded awful. I don't want to listen to that.
It sounds like, I don't know, Tekken or one of those kind of things.
Cool.
But yeah, if Lord of the Rings ever becomes a musical, I definitely want these guys to man the show or basically write the music for it, because they do an awesome job.
That's cool.
Camel's 3-part 9-minute epic from their 1974 album Mirage was a mostly instrumental retelling of Gandalf's transformation from grey to white. The songs were named Nimrodel, The Procession, and The White Rider, and it's really relaxing but kind of sounds like an acid trip. Also, you might know this one actually, The Wizard by Black Sabbath is directly inspired by Gandalf. This was confirmed by bassist Geezer Butler saying, I was reading The Lord of the Rings at the time, and I just based the lyrics on that Gandalf guy. So yeah.
Class. No, cool. I didn't know that, no.
Oh, right, okay. Do you like Black Sabbath? I can't remember.
I like Black Sabbath, yeah. They're not like my favorite band of that kind of genre, but I definitely like a lot of their tunes, yeah.
They're not my bottle of Mao.
No, they're good. I do like Black Sabbath, especially maybe some of their early stuff.
So Joni Mitchell's 1969 song, I Think I Understand, features the line, "Fear is like a wilderland," a reference to Tolkien's Wilderland, a northern swath of Middle-earth that houses the forest of Mirkwood. Then on to Toronto rock band Rush, embraced Middle-earth magic in 1975 with Rivendell, a mellow acoustic track that imagines the home of Lord Elrond as a place you can escape the world, where the Dark Lord cannot go, peace of mind and sanctuary by loud waters flow. Have you heard this before?
I have. I wasn't like massively into Rush, but I definitely went through a period where I like listened to a good lot of their music in like a short period of time. So yeah.
Oh, Rush, cool.
Great Canadian band.
Oh, cool. I didn't know. I wouldn't have a clue that you knew who they were now.
Have you never heard of Rush?
I don't know. I don't
before
think
your
so.
time. Before my time. Well, they're before, yeah, before my time as well, but like, I don't know. Yeah. I think,
did they come out in 2010?
Much to learn, you still have.
A really weird one here. You know Leonard Nimoy, but Leonard Nimoy bizarrely released a crazy song and music video called The Ballad of Bilbo Baggins in 1968, which basically looks like if Spock had taken over the Teletubbies and forced them to take acid and sing a quirky song. But yeah, you should seriously check that out on YouTube. It's really weird.
Oh man.
Have you seen it before?
No, you need to send me on like all these links that you've done, yeah, in the research in this episode, because I'm looking forward to like listening to all the music and watching all these crazy trips of songs.
In the middle of the earth, in the land of Shire, lives a brave little hobbit whom we all admire. With his long wooden pipe, fuzzy woolly toes, he lives in a hobbit hole and everybody knows him. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, he's only 3 feet tall.
Somebody sent me that on YouTube ages ago as well, and it was kind of, yeah, it was kind of like a blast from the past when I was looking at it for this podcast. I was like, oh yeah, Leonard Nimoy, what the hell is he doing writing music? And it just sounded really weird, and it was a really kind of crappy under budget style video, but yeah.
That's cool. I've heard, now that when you asked me at the beginning about if I knew any songs off the top of my head or anything like that, my first thought obviously was Led Zeppelin, because that was like the one that was probably the most obvious to me. But I suppose in research for lots of different episodes of this podcast, I've definitely come across certain things. For example, have you heard Christopher Lee's song, The Song of Durin?
No, is this when he was in a rock band?
I don't know if it was that time, because it definitely wasn't a rock song. It was a very kind of soft and slow melodic song, but it's a... he sings all about Durin and
deadly.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, it's very voice heavy, the song.
Yeah, I've never heard him sing before.
Yeah, I like his voice. Like, I mean, we all know that Christopher Lee, he's like famous for having an incredible voice, like an incredible speaking voice.
Mm.
And it's very similar when he's recording this song. I don't know much about the song. I don't know when it was recorded, but I would guess when he was like relatively old, like probably similar age to when they made the movies, or maybe even after, because his voice sounds similar to when he's it's similar to how he sounds in the movies as well. He sounds like an older gentleman, and he doesn't have a voice where he's like, you know, like he's not like hitting these high notes. He's not like going into falsetto or anything like that. Like, yeah, he's not like doing a Robert Plant on it, but he is it's really cool. Like, and he's I think he's got another song about Treebeard. He's got a few songs, I think, but that's the one that I remember the most, The Song of Durin it's called, and it's really cool. It's really
class,
cool as well.
Yeah.
I recommend that one.
Definitely gonna look that up as well. Perfect.
The shadow lies upon his tomb in Moria.
Doom. So one song I know you probably have heard of a few times and would love is Flight of the Conchords' Frodo, Don't Wear the Ring, which includes the beautiful line, "I don't rap about bitches and hoes, I rap about witches and trolls," which I think is so funny.
Oh, that's class. That's class. Yeah, I love Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah,
that's
I love so it. Good. So do you, speaking of Flight of the Conchords, do you know any other Lord of the Rings tidbits to do with Flight of the Conchords? I have a feeling you do.
I do. I know that Brad, I can't remember his actual, is that his real name? Is that his name from Flight of the Conchords? Or is it even Brad? Maybe it's the other guy. I can't remember. Brett McKenzie. Is that his real name or is that his name in Flight of the Conchords?
Yeah, that's his real name, yeah, I think.
Okay, yeah. Man, Brad. Brad McKenzie. Brett. I know that he plays the elf who is like, "My Lord Arwen," when she's when Arwen turns around and goes back when she's supposed to be taking the last boat to the Undying Lands, and she decides she's going to turn around and she gets the vision of her son with Aragorn, and then she decides she turns around and he's the one that's like, "Well, my lady Arwen,"
yeah he says "my lady," not "my lord."
What did I say? "My lord." "My Lady Elrond and my Lord Arwen." Sorry. Yeah.
My Lady. Yeah, he plays the character Figwit, and he was a massive fan of Lord of the Rings. So I think, was he friends with Peter Jackson? No, maybe not. Sure, aren't all people from New Zealand, they're all friends with each other, aren't they?
They're all similar first cousins.
Yeah. Twice removed.
"Yo, Frodo, what you doing wearing the ring? All-powerful jewelry, is that your new thing? I know it's hard when you're little more than 3'4", your little ass so close to the floor, trying to lead the fellows to the gates of Mordor.
The Fellowship.
Yeah, the Fellowship."
Other inspired songs include "This Day We Fight" by Megadeth and "In the House of Tom Bombadil" by Nickel Creek.
In the House.
Have you heard, you've heard the "In the House of Tom Bombadil" one?
I have, I've heard that one. And again, I think I heard it maybe relatively recently when I was researching some other podcast, and I just sometimes I hear like I or sometimes you know you're on YouTube and you see like related videos and it's like song of "In the House of Tom Bombadil," and you're like, oh well, I have to listen to that.
That's a weird one as well. So, it's like folk kind of music. It's like diddly idly kind of Irish style, isn't it?
I'm trying to remember that one exactly now, because there's definitely a lot of Tom Bombadil songs out there as well. If you go to YouTube and like Google Tom Bombadil music, you're gonna find like a shit ton of stuff there. There's gonna be no end to that list.
Yeah, I think so. "In the House of Tom Bombadil" by Nickel Creek is like, it's almost like Irish trad music. I don't know where they're from, but yeah, folk type music. But yeah. So, moving on from music, we all know that Tolkien was a professor at Oxford, but what else do you think of when you hear the word Oxford, Johnny?
I don't know. University?
What else?
What do I think of when I hear the word Oxford?
Where would you hear Oxford being used in, I don't know, would you say daily, but ever since you were a child, you would have...
The Oxford Dictionary.
Yes, well done. So that brings us on to the inspiration of the word walrus. The word walrus is actually inspired by Tolkien, technically, because Tolkien actually greatly contributed to the Oxford English Dictionary. He worked on the first W's between 1919 and 1920, including such words as walnut, waggle, wampum, and walrus.
Wibbly wobbly wonder.
And wiggly woogly. So for walrus, however, he wrote many entries as he worked on its difficult etymology. There actually still exists 6 different handwritten versions of Tolkien's walrus entry, and he was also honored by writing the dictionary's entry for the word hobbit. So I don't know, he got to jump back to the H's for that one, but I thought that was really cool when I heard that he just got
what
to work
year?
On the...
What year was the word walrus created?
Well, I don't think it's about that. I think he didn't invent the words. So what did
he do? He worked on the explanation in the Oxford Dictionary.
Yeah. So I'm guessing. All right, okay. I didn't confirm it, but I was imagining that the Oxford Dictionary came out in the 1920s, the Oxford English Dictionary, and he had to actually.
Do you have to like did he have to like confer with the Beatles when they were like, I am the Wallers? And he was like, yeah, I'm going to go to these guys. I'm going to ask them, what the hell, what should I put in?
The etymology.
Like, I am the Walrus. Yeah, yeah. He was like, guys, I need to, I'm working on the etymology of the word Walrus here. Exactly. You guys, you are the Walrus. And he's like to John Lennon, like, plural. John, you are the Walrus, right? So can you help me out here with my entry?
It's derived from the Beatles, right? It's confusing because the Beatles are an animal. And then the walrus is an animal. But technically, beetle is spelled the same as the beetle.
Beetle is a walrus. Maybe you've got a certain type of walrus, which is like the beetle walrus.
The walrus beetle.
Very teeny tiny walrus.
So also, there's some scientific naming that's been inspired by Tolkien. So I've got a couple here. Technically, the name of a recently, in the last 10 years, discovered primitive hominid is Homo floresiensis, but the meter tall man-like creature that stands roughly half the size of a man came to be called Hobbit by the media and by scientists. But unfortunately, the Tolkien estate banned the use of the word Hobbit in relation to promoting lectures, so they can't do that anymore. But yeah, like that's kind of like what a lot of scientists would be calling this, Homo floresiensis. Yeah, so there
so
you go.
So sort of like nearly like a species of, a cousin of humans was going to be called hobbits until the Tolkien state was like, nope, can't do that.
Yeah. Such a killjoy.
Yeah, we know the hobbits have all long since died out. So
There's also a dinosaur that was determined to be a new genus in 2012 and named Sauroneops, which means the Eye of Sauron, which is pretty cool. Sauron.
That is cool. Like, Cyclops, like ops must be something like maybe Latin for eye, somewhere in there.
I'm guessing because of the whole optical.
Cyclops seems like, psi would probably be one, ops, optics, etc. So Sauron the ops or whatever it's called.
Would it not be like mono would be one? Who knows?
Yeah.
Psi.
Well, I'm sure there's different, I don't know.
Maybe Psy means gross and I is op. So Cyclops is gross eye.
Maybe a Cyclops is just some guy that's always like, oh. They're like, stop sighing all the time. It's like, oh, only got one eye.
Oh. Yeah, actually, they were named after the way they sigh, not the fact that they just have one giant eye.
No, yeah, exactly.
Also, a small asteroid belt discovered in 1982 by M. Watt was named 2675 Tolkien after our main man. Galaxy NGC, one of the nearest neighbors to Earth, is affectionately known in the astronomer community as the Eye of Sauron. And this is probably because of the supermassive black hole at the center at the center of the galaxy does give it a rather sinister look.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I saw pictures of it and it's kind of like purpley and hazy, but like it has the shape of the Eye of Sauron, which is pretty cool. So
you've just mentioned two songs in the last minute by saying supermassive black hole and purple haze.
Ah, did I say purple haze?
You said a purpley haze. And if I hear those words, I'm like Jimi Hendrix.
when I hear purple haze, I think of blue aftershock and red aftershock. Mixed together.
Gross.
The last day, or a couple of weekends ago when we were up north, somebody decided to get shots for some reason. I said no. Everyone said no. But anyways, we all ended up getting shots. And they were like, do you have any purple haze, which is blue and red aftershock mixed together? And they mixed the two. So blue aftershock is £3. Red aftershock is £3. They mixed together and they charged us £6 each. For purple haze. We were like, what the fuck?
What? But sure, you would have got half the portion of each.
I know, but sure, look. They didn't understand. We were up north and they didn't have a clue what was going on. And we had to describe them what a purple haze was. And they're like, oh, so I just take these two drinks and mix them together. And we were like, yeah. Don't charge us for the two of them, though.
Yeah, God. Charge half for, you're getting half a portion of one and half a portion of the other. So,
yeah,
sounds a bit crazy.
So on to New Zealand. So many of us like to refer to New Zealand as Middle Earth, but it seems that the country itself gets a little bit confused from time to time with the land of Arda. For example,
You can get your passport stamped with a Welcome to Middle-earth stamp whenever you enter the country. New Zealand also issued coins, all legal tender, marked with dwarven runes and bearing images of scenes and characters from the Hobbit film trilogy back in 2012. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Actually,
God, I love New Zealand.
A little shout out, or not a shout out, but if anyone has these coins, I would love to see some pictures. Send them in. Actually, send me the coins. Oh. I want the money.
Give us money.
Give money me, money now.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, but these coins, they're, of course, collectibles, but New Zealand Post describes them as, quote, legal tender commemorative coins, which means they can be spent in a bar if you want, even though they are worth more than the face value. So I think some of them are, like, going for ridiculous prices nowadays.
Was there, like, a small number of these coins made that are now, that like, now that they're in value will increase, or was there, like, loads of them made?
Like some of them, I think the like Bilbo ones are more common, but then there's like a special number of Gandalf ones that are like ultra rare. Now, I'm not really sure because the post or the article that I was reading was made back in 2012 when the Hobbit movies were being released. So it was very new at the time. It was like these are being released. Right. And already back then, the price or the value of them was huge. So
it's greater than that of the Shire.
So also New Zealand resident Aaron Nicholson applied to have an unnamed peak in the Fiordland National Park christened Tolkien Mountain in honor of the Lord of the Rings author in 2012, but unfortunately in 2013 the New Zealand Geographic Board declined the application. So there you go.
Boo.
A failed attempt. I don't think Tolkien could have predicted he was going to influence an entire country, but there you go. New Zealand just...
They just adopted Tolkien. They were like...
New Zealand is Middle-earth. But like, they thought so too. They were like, this is Middle-earth. Like, what are you going to do about it?
I mean, yeah, that was... The creation of the Lord of the Rings movies was such a good thing for New Zealand in terms of tourism and things like that. But then also, the creation of New Zealand was such a good thing for Lord of the Rings. Because that is basically Lord of the Rings. That is Middle-earth. That's like, I mean... Can you imagine that movie being shot anywhere else?
Like, could you imagine work. Shot in like Scunthorpe or Liverpool or something?
In Scunny.
Yeah, no, you're right. I'd love to know for our New Zealand listeners, because I know there's a couple out there. I've seen the percentages. And I know there's a couple out there, so please send us in.
We're watching you.
Yeah. Send us in some of the kind of unknown things about New Zealand, because...
Oh, send us in a voice message with your beautiful accents.
Oh, do that. Yes. I'd love to... Yeah,
you do that.
Do. Yeah, you can send us in to @melon_heads on Twitter, but... Yeah, and can you confirm as well if the airport still has that giant Smeagol catching the fish, or was that just around during the movies?
Savage.
I want to know the like intricate tidbits that like isn't, you know.
Yeah, I love that like flying into New York, you land into like JFK, flying into Liverpool Airport, you've got like John Lennon Airport, and flying into New Zealand, it's like Smeagol Airport. Oh, that's class.
What's the name of the airport, I wonder, actually?
I don't know. I've just made up Smeagol Airport, and now it's going to be that name forever, in my opinion.
The motto is, fly, you fools. So, the next inspiration I have is hippies. So, Lord of the Rings was not published... it was not published in mass paperback until 1965.
Hippies!
Hey Pippin, hurries. So it was not published in mass paperback until 1965. Well, that's legally published because a few years earlier, Ace found what they thought was a copyright loophole and essentially pirated the paperback rights in the US. So the mass distribution found an eager audience. Yeah. They were just like releasing loads of these.
Who's Ace? Is that just some publisher?
Ventura.
Ventura.
Yes, Satan?
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. You sounded like someone else.
The mass distribution found an eager audience with the uprising hippie movement. The struggle against Sauron echoed anti-establishment feelings, and the pacifism of Frodo reflected the anti-war sentiment in Vietnam. The hippies latched on to the little guys making a difference theme of the series, And by now, every good head shop has had some groovy Lord of the Rings artwork, such as Frodo Lives and Gandalf for President bumper stickers. Buttons, t-shirts, and all the sorts began appearing everywhere. But
I could definitely imagine Cheech and Chong with like a Gandalf for President t-shirt or something like that.
Who's Cheech and Chong?
Cheech and Chong. Cheech and Chong. They're just two famous stoners that have like a couple of movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's the name of the movies?
Well, Cheech and Chong is in the title. Cheech and Chong.
Oh, right. Okay. Sounds kind of like a Bill and Ted or a, I don't know, the...
Yeah, exactly. But that's their...
Wayne's
like,
World
their
or something.
Actual names like... what the hell is the name of the thing? Cheech and Chong. I can't remember the name of their movies. But yeah, they're just like these two guys that were like... famous stoners who were like always promoting like weed in like the '60s, I suppose, and definitely at least one of them definitely went to jail for like a long time for they set up like bong companies back in like the '70s and stuff, and they were like selling bongs and whatever. And then I know that one of them, I think it's Cheech, I think he's now he's still going around as a comedian, and he's doing like, he does like stand up and stuff like that, but I don't know which one's which. I think maybe one of them is dead. I'm not too sure.
It's kind of like a Keenan and Kel situation there.
Is one of them dead?
Well, that was the rumor for ages, but also people just don't know which one's which.
All right. I know which one's which. Because
I know which one's which as well.
Kel loves orange soda.
Yeah.
Keenan's the fat one.
Exactly. I think Keenan was rumored to be dead for ages, but he's on Saturday Night Live, so...
Yeah, he does SNL.
Yeah.
So, maybe it's like a Paul McCartney thing where they're like, he's on SNL, but that's not him. That's actually somebody else that's like pretending to be him. And
yeah,
the real Keenan died years ago, the same as the real Paul McCartney died years ago.
Yeah, or the real Kim Jong-un died like last year or whatever. Have you seen the reports of like people being like, wait, this new emperor is like way skinnier than the last one, and there's loads
of
things.
Maybe he was doing like Joe Wicks during the lockdown.
Could have been, but like there's loads of these things. Like, oh my god, he's now left-handed when he used to be right-handed, and he does this when he used to do that, and you know, it's kind of crazy.
He is a supreme leader. There will be no questions.
Who loves orange soda? Kel loves orange soda. Is it true? Is it true? Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes, it's true. Ooh. I do. Ooh.
But anyway. But as a result of the hippie infatuation, the environmental and green movement picked up the Lord of the Rings as an inspiration. In the series, evil physically manifests as pollution and industrialism, and the heroic acts literally clean and purify the landscape. So the environmental themes of the books are championed and turned into activism in works like Ents, Elves and Eriador, The Environmental Vision of J.R.R. Tolkien by Matthew Dickerson. And the environmentalist use of Tolkien's work has outlived the hippies. The National Wildlife Federation has partnered with Warner Brothers to use the release of The Hobbit as a chance to promote environmental education for children by providing resources and activities related to the movie. So there you go now. Did you know that?
Very good. I didn't know any of that.
And do you remember any of it now?
I cannot remember. I just blanked out there for a while. So I have no idea what's going on. Who are you?
Where Lord of the Rings equals green, which equals good, which, yeah, inspiration.
Yeah. No, I'm joking. I was listening intently and it's all very lovely.
So moving on swiftly to science fiction. As we both love the creator George Lucas for his Star Wars films, he actually confirmed that he was greatly inspired by Tolkien's work, which uses a lot of epic fantasy structure and grafts science fiction ideas onto it. There are even some outright nods, such as the forest moon of Endor. You know Endor, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Endor is actually one of the Elvish language, well, the Elvish language Quenya. It's a translation of a certain word. Do you know what that word would be? Endor.
Mordor.
No, I'm
joking, because Endor, wait, Endor is the green planet, right?
Yeah, Endor is the green one.
So Endor is a Quenya word for something.
Yeah, I don't think you'll get it. I wouldn't have gotten it either.
I don't know, chewy.
No, it's actually Endor is the Quenya word for Middle Earth.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
There you go. But yeah, Endor. So that was like a nice nod that
that's George, pretty cool. George, that's amazing. That's cool.
Yeah,
I didn't know anything about that.
Also, the TV show Babylon 5. I don't know if you've ever seen this. It looks like a pile of crap, but it's riddled with Middle Earth references, such as the code of the Babylon 5's Rangers, which is: we walk in the dark places that no one else will enter. We stand on the bridge and no one may pass. Which is a direct call upon...
Smeagol.
Yeah. Precious.
You shall not pass, hobbitses. Yeah.
So that's obviously like a direct rip-off Gandalf and his confrontation with the Balrog when he shouts, "You shall not pass."
Which, that line was written by...
Tolkien.
Nope.
Ian McKellen.
Nope.
Me.
I believe Smeagol. It was Philippa Boyens or Fran Walsh. One of the two of them. I think it was Philippa Boyens.
Oh, wrote
the
sorry.
Line, "You shall not pass."
Oh, yeah. Because it's "you cannot Tolkien, pass."
Yes, you cannot pass.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
and she changed it to "you." She shouldn't change it because he also says "you cannot pass" before he says the famous "you shall not pass."
But,
yeah, so she, I think it was Philippa Boyens who wrote "You Shall Not Pass." And that was the one that was even more successful than the original "You Cannot Pass."
Mm. And I thought you were joking. So that's why I didn't think or give you a serious answer, because I think I would have gotten that. I was like...
Oh, right. Sorry. Just another little tidbit.
There you go.
There you are now.
You shall not pass!
On to Unicode. So this is kind of one for the nerds, or, well, I don't know, do you call them nerds? But like, I did programming in college and we used this thing called Unicode. You might not have heard of Michael Everson, but he's doing some really amazing work for language and technology. He's a co-author of the Unicode standard and contributing editor and Irish national representative to ISO/IEC. In an interview on the Dork Forest podcast, he says his inspiration for his life's work came from Tolkien. After hearing Nicol Williamson read an abridged version of The Lord of the Rings in middle school, he was set on fire in terms of like how much he loved Tolkien. He set himself on fire.
He was like one of those. He was like one of those Buddhist monks who was in protest, set himself on fire
at the end. That was great inspiration.
Yeah.
So basically, he read all of Tolkien and decided to be an Anglo-Saxon language professor, just like Professor Tolkien himself. And luckily for the world, he expanded his linguistic interest. He is also currently in the process of trying to get Tolkien's Tengwar, the Elven script, and Curth, the Dwarven runes, encoded into Unicode. So Unicode is like a coding language, basically. You know, just in case you ever need to write an email in either of those languages. So yeah, like it's pretty cool how this guy is really inspired by Tolkien, and that kind of gave him the step to start teaching Anglo-Saxon language, and that kind of brought him onto Unicode, and now he's like one of the biggest names in Unicode. So I think that's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
If that's not an inspiration, I don't know what is. So on to food. Tolkien's work has also inspired the likes of cookbooks called Recipes from the World of Tolkien and An Unexpected Cookbook. And that's all I have about that.
And it inspired Second Breakfast and Elevenses.
And Afternoon Tea and Supper.
Dinner.
And dessert.
And Original Breakfast.
I just want to ask you as well about gaming. Do you know what very popular game would have been inspired directly by Tolkien or Lord of the Rings?
You mean a game that's not a Lord of the Rings game, I suppose.
A board game.
Ah, okay.
A game that makes you bored.
I don't know, Risk?
I'll give you a clue. It's one that neither you or I have ever played. No, neither you or I have ever played this game, but it's like massive in the nerd community.
A board game?
Yeah.
Give me a minute.
Another clue. I don't even know if this has a board. Or it's not even a game.
It's not even a game. This is like...
It's a type of bird. Not many messes.
Is it an unladen swallow?
It's a shoe.
Is it only a board game or is it a computer game as well?
I mean, it's so massive that it's probably a lot of things now. It could be a video game.
You mean like, is it World of Warcraft?
Oh, it's like that, but it's the board game.
The one... Yeah, sorry. I don't mean World of Warcraft. The one where it's in like... It's in like Stranger Things when they're playing it. Yeah, what's that called? Hang on.
So
it's Warcraft. No.
What's another word for a basement? And what does Daenerys? What does Daenerys Targaryen ride?
Dragons.
Cellar and dragons. You're so close. The two guys that made so Game of Thrones, what are their names?
Dan and Dave? Dungeons and Dragons.
D&D, well done.
Dungeons and Dragons.
Dungeons and Dragons. Clearly, it's kind of obvious, but the theme of Dungeons and Dragons was influenced by mythology, fiction, and the contemporary fantasy authors of the 60s and 70s. But the presence of halflings, elves, dwarfs, half-elves, orcs, rangers, and the likes often draw comparisons to the work of J.R.R. Tolkien. At one point...
And proud feet.
Proud feet! at one point, the resemblance was even closer before the threat of copyright action from the Tolkien Enterprises prompted the name changes of Hobbit to Halfling, Ent to Treant, and Balrog to Balor. So they actually had characters that were called Halfling, Ent, and Balrog, and they're still trying to get away with it. Very cheeky.
In Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. Oh. But I think the creators claimed that they weren't inspired by Tolkien, but they just wanted to make it more mainstream because of the success of The Lord of the Rings. But
Snakey.
Before we finish, we have a couple of questions sent in by some of you guys, so I thought we'd go through a few. So the first one, sent in by @Ruth_91 on Twitter, said, "Can't stop thinking about how close the spellings and sounds of the names Sauron and Saruman are. We should have seen it coming, really. Can @Melonheads shed any light on this? The prefixes aren't exactly the same, but I'm wondering if there's any affiliation or link at all." So what do you think, John?
Sauron and Saruman. I don't know. I can't give you a good answer off the top of my head. I'm sure there probably is, like, for example, both names Sauron and Saruman, they are not the original names of either of those characters. Both of those characters, those names would have been maybe nicknames that they were given by the people of Middle-earth. So, for example, we know that Saruman, his name when he was a Maya spirit was Kurumo, and Sauron, his name also originally was Anatar when he was a Maya spirit as well. They're both Maya, these two characters. So probably Sauru or Saul. I'm not sure. Also, I'm just thinking now off the top of my head, I'm thinking of a lot of other maybe evil characters that begin with letters S, like Shelob and Smaug and who else? Shagrat and Sharku.
Yeah.
These are all... And maybe Sackville Bagginses, you know? Maybe, maybe that was something with like S characters in there in Lord of the Rings.
Smeagol.
And Smeagol. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's something with the letter S, or maybe there's something with the... Like, obviously, I would say that because Tolkien, everything was thought out. Mm. Everything like this, Man translates to this and Sauru translates to this. Like, sure, I'm sure. I don't know off the top of my head. But I'm sure that he probably has an actual breakdown of what those words mean. And there's probably a reason. I don't know. I'm hoping that you're going to enlighten me.
Well, I can enlighten you for just that one part where Sauron comes from Sara, which is putrid. So literally, he is the putrid one or evil one. And Saruman from Saru is skill, literally meaning man of skill or the cunning man. So, but other than that, I don't think there's any major etymology connection between them. Obviously, Tolkien wrote the languages in Quenya and Sindarin, which both names are supposed to be based, but I don't know. I've seen no evidence that there's supposed to be
just
a link.
One thing as well is in Sauron. I'm pretty sure that the name Sauron, the thing I've seen the most of the meaning of Sauron was actually, I just remembered it now, is the abhorred.
Hmm.
So if you abhor something, it means you hate something. So the abhorred was
the hated one.
Is it, like the hated one, basically. I think that was kind of a reflection. It was kind of like the opposite of what he was known as initially, which was Anatar, which was, what the hell did Anatar mean?
Fair one?
Anatar, no. Anatar meant the Lord of Gifts, but actually, no, sorry, I'm getting confused. That was his name that he took on when he pretended to be an elf, and he brought the gifts to the guys. But sorry, Myron. Myron was, was his original name, and that meant the admirable.
Yeah,
so
yeah, I remember.
I remember that he had two names that both began with A. I remember that, like, as in their meanings were A. So he'd Myron, which was admirable, and then the opposite Sauron, then, which was the abhorred. And so those are very opposite styles in their meanings. So his character seemed to be quite different when he was either Myron or Sauron.
I wish somebody aborted him when he was a baby. yeah, well,
Are you going to have that baby, or is it going to be aboard? He was a board game.
So yeah, at Ruth 91, I hope that kind of answers your question. So we have another question here from @Jesus_Jugs. So the question she asks is, at Melonheads, is there any part of Lord of the Rings you guys don't like? And then in brackets, films. Any scene, any line, any story, any CGI, anything at all, anything cringy. We can all agree it's the best story ever told, of course. What do you think?
Ooh, I don't know. I think that's a difficult question. I haven't really thought about it, so I can't think of something exactly. I could say, for example, that that's difficult to answer because I think I have opinions about certain things that change over time. And maybe, for example, the first thing that comes to my mind is that there definitely was a period of time that I didn't really enjoy the Two Towers movie as much as I enjoyed the other two, just mainly because I think there was a lot of scenes with Frodo and Sam and Smeagol, which I kind of found a bit boring at a certain time. But they definitely came good again, and now I love that movie. Mm. And so I think it depends on kind of like maybe the moment of my life that I'm in, that maybe certain things. Now, of course, don't get me wrong, there's loads of little small like nitpicks and kind of things that we both have and that we've spoken about before. And I know that in our Helm's Deep episode, we spoke about a few little things that were kind of going, oh, this is a bit weird. For example, the one that I spoke about in that episode was how they rebuilt the door, the main door into Helm's Deep, and that Aragorn and Gimli basically put their lives on the line to give Théoden the time to rebuild that door. And then as soon as the door is rebuilt, Théoden's like, all right, get out of there. And they get out of there, and immediately Théoden's like, all right, fall back to the keep. And they're just like, they surrender that door again. Yeah. And it's like, you know, that's one thing that I'm like, why the hell did they go to all this trouble to rebuild that door? And then it's just whatever. That's just a small thing. But again, that's a small little mini gripe. It's definitely not something that I would say is something that I dislike about the series. And sorry, about just something I dislike about the movies. But yeah, I'm not sure. What about you? I can't really think of anything that I dislike. Obviously, we both agree that we love these movies. So it's hard for me to dislike something.
Yeah. Again, like, I didn't
I didn't like the music by Howard Shore.
No, that part ruined it for me. Yeah. yeah, not really. Like, there's not much. I don't think. I actually tried to think about it, and I was like, I can't really think of anything. There was one thing, like, there is one bit of CGI that annoys me a little bit, and I don't think we've ever talked about it before, but I always pick up on it, and I've been picking up on it since before I've ever done like these podcasts or done loads of research into Lord of the Rings. And it's just after the Warg jumps from the cliff and kills Hama, is it? And his horse in the background is lying on its back, or it's lying on its side and it's struggling, and it just looks if you just look at the horse, it looks really bad, the CGI.
I've never even noticed that before.
Oh man, I'm going to ruin it for you. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, but like, I don't know, ages ago I remember spotting that and it just looks really cartoonish, and now every time I look at the horse I'm like, it just looks crap.
I think any of my little gripes with Lord of the Rings, I think we spoke about them before on previous podcasts. For example, in that same scene, Legolas is like up onto the horse. That always kind of bugs me. I'm like, it doesn't make any sense.
I know.
He goes the wrong way, goddammit.
It's a head scratcher.
But again, that, like, none of these little things take away from my enjoyment of the movie. And again, maybe in CGI terms, yeah, there's a couple of little scenes that you can see the CGI and you're like, it's maybe just throws you out of the movie for a very slight second. Like, if you see that scene where your Hama's horse is kind of like, oh, that's real, I can see how that's done. And it's almost like seeing behind the trick of a magician, and you can say, oh, I see how that's done, and it kind of takes away maybe that magic for a moment. But it's an older movie. It's 20 years old. So, we should be so thankful that we don't see more obvious examples of CGI just in your face. Like, that's obviously terrible. Like, if you're watching Godzilla from the 50s or something,
yeah,
just like just a little toy Godzilla, it's like, "Arr!" And you're like, okay, well, that's clearly terrible.
Exactly. But, like, any of those CGI things, like, most of the CGI is unbelievable, and I still don't understand how it's so good. But in terms of, like, the rest of the movie, like, I've heard people complaining about, you know, the, like, one of the last scenes when all the Fellowship come in to see Frodo, and there's like slow-mo and they're all like staring at each other, and I've heard complaints about that, but I'm like, yeah, that's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah, that is good. I do, when you just say that to me now, there is, whenever I'm watching the end of The Return of the King, I definitely think that the scene at the Grey Havens when they're getting on the boat and they're leaving, I think there's, and maybe in the scenes, a couple of scenes before that, I think there's just a lot of slow motion used. Like, not even slow motion, but just like, where the hobbits are speaking and it's all just like, the Shire has been saved, Sam, but not for me. And you're like, that's not a natural speed that somebody would speak at. So it's all slowed down and their speech is so
pure Zack Snyder,
ponderous and slow. And you're like, wow, what is going on here? Why does this sound so unnatural? And so maybe there's those things where, you know, those scenes at the end, maybe a lot of people complain that they're kind of, they dragged out the end. I wouldn't complain that they dragged out the end, because I enjoy each of those scenes. But I think that in some of those scenes, there's just a lot of slow motion being used. And I'm like, I don't know if it's actually, needed for all of
it. More Lord of the Rings for me.
Well, there you go. To answer your question, no, there's nothing in the Lord of the Rings that either Dave or I.
One thing, though, that kind of annoys me, it's nothing to do with the movies. It's ever since memes came out, and like, now whenever there's like a really, really funny meme and you look at it a million times and you enjoy it so much, whenever that scene pops up, you just kind of, you have to laugh, and it kind of takes the seriousness and it takes the meaning away from certain scenes. But that's nothing that Peter Jackson could have.
Takes the meaning away.
The memingness. That's nothing to do with Peter Jackson. That's just to do with society.
No, that's just to do with the way the world, that's how the world has gone now. People just make memes about stuff, and it could be a very serious movie, but if it's got memes, it's probably going to make you look at that movie in a more comedic light. But
you know what I mean?
Definitely nothing to do with the way they're made.
We live in a society.
What do you mean?
So our next question, sent in by @anywho on Instagram, is, why does Arwen get to choose a mortal life like Elrond and Elros? Is it because she is Elrond's daughter, or does every elf have this option? An interesting question.
Great question. And she has given two possibilities in the answer, and the first one is the correct answer. The correct answer is that it's completely because she is the daughter of Elrond. And as Elrond, we've spoken about this before very briefly, that Elrond and Elrond was known as Elrond Half-Elven because he came from the line of Beren and Lúthien, who Beren the man, basically started a line of people with Luthien, who was supposed to be the most beautiful of all the elves back in those times. And they were the first people to kind of create a line of people from both men and elves. And Luthien ended up kind of making a deal with the Valar, to who again are the kind of gods or the demigods under Eru Iluvatar. She kind of made a deal with them that she wanted to live out her days with Beren, and she wanted to be basically become counted as the as a man,
immortal,
like a male man,
a male man, yeah, like the postman,
like the light.
The postman Pat.
She said, I just really want to deliver mail. So she became counted among the line of men. And then from then on, all of their children, all the people that came from that line, specifically that line, they also had this same kind of a choice. It was kind of, if you read into it, there's a lot of like backstory. It's not just because they're from the line. It's a combination of that and the kind of sacrifice, the original sacrifice that Luthien made, and which was counted among, like, that was like Romeo and Juliet times 100. It was like a way bigger deal. And it's, yeah, like, I mean, you can read about all this in the Silmarillion. But yeah, so basically that was the main reason that they came from. They came from that line, and it was kind of like the honor of that sacrifice that Luthien had made originally, that they were given the choice by the Valar. The Valar were the ones who granted this decision.
But I think one thing that's not right is that it wasn't the whole line of Luthien that basically got this gift. I think there was a few steps down of, like, I can't remember who was Luthien's sons and daughters or what she had, but I think it was actually
there was Elwing, who was the mother of Elrond and Elros. She was the daughter of, now again, as I said, it is complicated, and there's also Amaya, who is actually part of their lineage as well. Amaya was involved in how they came to be. So there's basically Elrond and Arwen come from the line of Maia and men and elves. And so there was kind of, there's a lot of different sort of factors in play. It's not a straightforward answer, but yeah, basically it's because of their lineage, and it's not any elf that could do it. Also, there were a couple of people between Luthien and Elrond that didn't choose that, but I don't know if it's because they didn't have the choice, or maybe that they just never would have considered it.
Well, I that's what I was going to get onto. I think that they didn't have the choice. It was for whatever troubles and like problems that they had, basically Elrond and Elros's descendants, or sorry, for the trouble of Elrond and Elros's descendants, Eru, the god of Middle Earth and whatever, gifts mortality to both the brothers. So didn't basically gave the gift of mortality to Luthien, but didn't to all the line in between Elrond and Elros, just to them two. And it was only because Elros accepted it, so he went on to become the first king of Numenor and all that kind of jazz. But Elrond didn't accept it, which meant that it would pass on to either his sons or daughter, and Arwen got to make that choice. So that's from what I read. I don't know, but it does seem to be a little bit ambiguous, and I think some people have different answers. But again, guys, send in what you think. If there's any Lord of the Rings Tolkien experts out there, which I know there are a lot that claim that they are. I see them all the time.
And we don't claim that we are, so yeah, there's definitely people out there that know a lot more than us. So yeah,
send them in. But please don't send in those messages that say, oh no, you guys, you got it wrong. Just inform us.
We don't mind getting things wrong. It's fine. Also, I mean, I don't have the greatest memory in the world. I try and read as much Lord of the Rings books and material and different things as much as I can, or watch Lord of the Rings based videos on YouTube. And I retain about 7% of what I read and watch. And then on my second viewing or my second reading, I need to go back and try and take in a little bit more. It's hard to memorize. It's hard to remember all these things. And so I've read The Lord of the Rings various times, and I've read it with highlighters and pens and notes, and I try to take down notes. I try to highlight as much things as I can that I think is important information, and I still find it really difficult to retain all this information. So it's not easy. It's not easy to remember and to have all the answers. But we do appreciate anybody who can like enlighten us a little bit more.
Enlighten us away. So final question. And again, this comes from @Jesus_Juggs. And she asks, @Melonheads, why doesn't Gollum age the way Bilbo does? I mean, Bilbo ages super rapid in the yearish 17 to 18 years in the book with no ring. Yet Gollum, who is already 500 plus in The Hobbit, doesn't age at all in the 60 odd years without the ring. He should have withered into dust, right? What do you think, Johnny? Should he have withered into dust?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Great question.
That is a very good question. I don't know. I mean, obviously, yeah, we see how Bilbo ages dramatically in the few years that he's given up the ring, and we know that 17 years passes between Bilbo giving up the ring and then the Lord of the Rings, the main thing starting, and then that would have been another kind of year and a half before they. No, sorry, there's another 4 years that pass before they end up taking that boat. So, you know, it's over 20 years that are between over which Bilbo ages. So, and he ages, I suppose, relatively dramatically from the movies, at least what we see. I can't remember from the books if they say how it was, if they said that it was as dramatic as we see.
Well,
his change, his physical appearance change.
I can give you one clue here. All right, so there's one significant difference between Gollum and Bilbo. Let's say if we look at the movies, when we last see Bilbo, what's the difference between him losing the ring then and when Gollum has lost the ring?
Well, is it something to do with how like Gollum has basically already claimed the ring as his own, and it's kind of like corrupted him to like a huge extent that he's like, he's almost connected to like Sauron at that stage or something, and he's got like
An element to the longevity that Gollum had the ring contributes to the longevity of his life after he loses the ring in comparison to Bilbo.
I think so. It's like, imagine you have the ring for a long time and it like completely corrupts you. I think if it corrupts you and so that you end up living for 500 years and then you lose the ring, that probably you could probably go for another couple of hundred years in order to lose that kind of hold of the ring upon you. Whereas if Bilbo had it for a shorter period of time, the same with Frodo. Frodo had it for, you know, a few years. So when he loses the ring or when he ends up getting rid of the ring, it probably has a shorter period of restoration period or a period of like rehab that he needs to go through to like get rid of his inner demons. Whereas Gollum, he needs a serious shrink to get into his head and be like, right, okay, we've got a lot of work to do here. So maybe he's still under the control of the ring and he's still kind of, as I said, like I said before, he's kind of like connected to Sauron, but what I meant was kind of like he's kind of bound to the ring a little bit, kind of like the ring wraiths who they're completely bound to the ring as well. I'm not really sure. Like, I mean, I don't have a good answer. I'm trying to think out loud at the moment.
There's still one thing you're missing. If we're just looking at the movies, for example.
Like his obsession?
When we see Bilbo at the very end and he's an old, old man, what's the difference between him there and Gollum for most of the movies? For all of the movies, pretty much.
What's the difference?
There's one big significant thing that happened in between.
He doesn't care so much about the ring anymore.
No,
he's not as obsessed with it. He's tired.
So when we see Bilbo at the very end of the movie, he's an old, old man, and that is because the ring has been destroyed, and with it the effects of the ring. So immediately he just like turned into a wrinkly, wrinkly old man. Whereas if the ring had been destroyed and Gollum didn't die, Gollum probably would have just burst into ash because the effects of the ring.
Okay, so kind of almost like the way that the destruction of the ring, caused Barad-dûr to collapse as well, because that had been made with the power of the ring. So the power of the ring was controlling the construction of that tower. So also the power of the ring was what was controlling Smeagol and Bilbo, you were saying. So basically when that was destroyed. So from that logic, we should...
Yeah, it was giving them longevity of life.
Right, so we should imagine that Bilbo actually looked the complete same up until the moment the ring was destroyed. And then one day he just woke up and he was like, oh my God, I've aged...
Terribly.
50 years in a day, yeah.
He does look a bit older when he's in Rivendell, and I think that's down to just he didn't have the ring as long as Gollum. Mm. So it was slowly taking its toll, or it was slowly like... you know, reducing his life, whereas at the end it just rapidly went up because the ring was destroyed. So if we look at the book, when Arwen arrives at Minas Tirith after the destruction of the ring, only a couple of weeks before, she says to Frodo, "Do you wonder at that, ring bearer? For you know the power of the thing which is now destroyed, and all that was done by the power is now passing away. But your kinsman is in ancient years now, according to his kind. And he will not again make any long journey save one."
I have a question, however.
Yeah.
Right, well, why then is it that when Frodo and when they get to Rivendell the first time in the first movie and then they see Bilbo, and this obviously is a few years afterwards, like, I mean, in book terms, it's 17 years. In the movie terms, it's probably, you know, a year later. He's quite a lot. He's not as old as he is at the end of The Return of the King, but he's a lot older, so much so that they talk about it and he says, "It seems that old age has finally caught up with me." And he's definitely a lot more frail. He's definitely a lot more elderly in that moment as well. So
yeah, but I just said that there, how like when you see him in Rivendell, he's older. But that's probably just due to the fact that he has had the ring far less. Or he had it not as long as Gollum. Gollum had it for 500 years. So without the ring, Gollum hasn't had the ring for like 60 years. So he's probably... you know, going bad as well, but not as rapid as Bilbo, who's had it for far less than that. See how quick he gets really, really old. He's like on death's door by the end of the movie, which is only, what, a couple of months later?
Well, he's quite ready for another adventure.
But yeah, also in the books, Gollum confirms that he knows what would happen to him if the ring is destroyed when he says, "Run, precious stars. Real die, yes, die into dust." Did you hear any of that, or do I have to repeat that again?
"When precious dies, we'll die into dust."
Ah, well done. So there, I hope that's another great question. So thanks very much, at Jesus Jokes.
That was a good one, yeah.
Yeah, I hope that answers it.
"I think I'm quite ready for another adventure."
So thank you so much, guys, for the questions. If you have any more questions, you can send them onto us on Twitter at @melon_heads, on our Facebook and Instagram. Also, if you're enjoying these podcasts, please help us out by leaving a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. And if you'd like to support us even further, we now have a Buy Me a Coffee account, which is buymeacoffee.com/themelonheads. It's quick and easy to use. You don't need to set up an account. You can just send us a coffee or two. So thank you guys ever so much, and we'll see you next week.